Good evening. This is Betsy Hamilton. This is the UCS board meeting on Thursday, the 20th of June, and we are starting at 5:02. We'll start with a call to order, calling the meeting to order and a board member roll call. So let's begin down to my right at the end. Could each person say their name?
Jen Fenton, Director of Strategic Initiatives.
Danielle Kelsick, Deputy Superintendent of Instruction.
Parnas Gulshani Fleckner, Superintendent.
Betsy Hamilton, Board Member.
Denise Berger, Board Member.
Dina Fong, Board Member.
Mason Williams, Board Member.
Howard Ho, Londa Elementary School District Representative.
Jeremiah David, Director of Compliance and Ops.
Cindy Wardell, School Principal.
Thank you, Cindy.
And we have some Zoom participants as well.
Anthony Jowood is here.
Anthony Jowood, yes. Present.
Present. And
Tracy Bondi.
Tracy.
And Dorothy Lee.
Okay, and Dorothy Lee remotely. Thank you. Anybody else? Is there a
no, that's
that
just the
okay.
phone.
All right, thank you. So I'd like to ask if there are any proposed changes to the agenda.
Possibly the closed session. I don't know if we're going to hold a closed session today.
I don't believe we need to.
Okay. We can table that then.
Okay.
At the very end.
All right. Thank you. so let's take a... So let's start with Parnas. I don't think we need to...
I think we have
roll
to do
call vote.
Approve the agenda. So we vote to approve the agenda, and then it's opener.
Okay. Could I get a motion to approve the agenda?
I move to approve the agenda. Mason.
Mason, thank you. Second.
Dina, second.
Thank you very much.
And then you can just roll call by saying their names and they say aye.
Okay. Just board members, roll call. Start with Mason.
Aye.
Dina, aye.
Denise, aye.
Betsy, aye.
Howard, aye.
And Anthony.
Anthony, aye.
Excellent.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Okay, so for the opener, as you may have noticed, this is a big board meeting for us because we are celebrating the handoff from the amazing Anthony Jowood, who's been leading our board for many years. Very thoughtfully and efficiently, and has been a great resource and friend to us, and handing off to Dr. Betsy Hamilton. So I wanted for our opener, if you could take a minute and think of an appreciation for Anthony's leadership. Not everyone has to say something if you don't have it, but if you do and you want to share an appreciation for Anthony, take a moment to think it through, and then we're going to share it out in the group.
Well, I will get us.
Yeah.
I didn't know if we could start.
Yeah, I'm trying to give time to everyone, but go for it, Betsy.
We're halfway between a moment of silence.
I'm Betsy. Anthony, I would like to share that your breadth of knowledge, your life experience, your work experience, your professionalism, and your willingness to help me out in this transition. I appreciate all of that and all your dedication to the organization and to everyone in it. And it's big shoes to fill. So I reminded Jeremiah that I have been to many, many board meetings, but I have not chaired a board meeting because I was the superintendent. So it's a different role, and I might be giving you a call for advice. Thank you.
Thank you, Betsy, and I have no doubt you will fill those shoes and beyond, given your knowledge, skill, and experience. But I'm here for you anytime you need me.
Thank you. Anybody else?
Can I just ask a clarifying question, like on the board? What are the titles now, and then I'll get to my compliments. So Betsy is moving into president of the board?
Yes, yes.
And Anthony is still holding a position, or just going back into being an ordinary board member?
For now, an ordinary board member.
Until the next office. We're all extraordinary.
Okay. Well, I mean, Anthony, you're anything but ordinary. And you, like, really had, I have felt a sense of calm with you at the helm of the board. Like, you really do convey a lot of professionalism and, like, just calm. Like, I feel like you just always felt like you got it. Like, if you didn't have it, that never came through, because I was always like, well, he knows what he's doing, so the rest of us know what we're doing. Like, it's just, like, really affirming leadership, so thank you.
Thank you.
You don't have to
agree.
Go in order, yeah.
Okay, well, I was just going to say I completely agree. You've made it easy for people like me. So thank you.
I also wanted to thank you for leading us through lots of challenges, COVID, and really just kept us in the loop and kept us all calm about everything, and just like a friendly face, and I really appreciate that, that you've always welcomed every new member and kept us, you know, going through every board meeting, just, you know, keeping us on track, and I really appreciate your professionalism and friendship.
Yeah, I echo what's been said, and I also think about the way that you've been so inclusive and the way that you include everyone in the meetings, your thoughtfulness, you know, and, you know, whether it's thinking about us as individuals and the organization at the same time, I think it's been very impressive, and I've learned a lot just from watching and being around you, so thank you.
Thank you.
I'll say from the staff perspective, Anthony, I don't know when you joined the board. It was a really long time ago. but from when you, I think, I don't know if it was before you were president or not, but you started, I don't know if you all know this, but he actually has come and led some leadership sessions for staff and co-led a session with me when we first started a math initiative back in 2018 or 17 or 16 or something long ago, and I was ever since then have just been continuously impressed by the amount of commitment and just expertise you're willing to be, not just to the board but to the actual leadership development of the organization. So really deeply appreciate you, Anthony.
Thank you, Dana. It was my pleasure.
Anthony,
you are just one of the most thoughtful, stable, practical, like, responsive leaders I've got the chance to know. I don't think that you've never needed to meet beyond what I've needed to meet. Like, wherever I was, you were there to meet me and to support me. And it was such a gift to have you during the ups and downs of COVID and all of the fluctuations of these last few years. You have been a great thought partner and support. Your knowledge of human resource issues, your ability to keep the mission at the center of everything, your knowledge of the budget, your willingness to connect us to partners. You're just a great, great board president and member and friend, and I'm so grateful for your leadership. So thank you for sitting in this role for the number of years that you have. I think you joined in 2014 or early 2015.
I don't remember, but yeah, it was.
Yeah, it's a long time. Thank you. Thank you, Anthony.
It's gone by fast, actually.
So with that, thank you. Thank you for the opener time.
Yeah, if I may say just something very quickly. You know, I started as an advisor, as Danielle indicated, joined the board, and obviously then took on the board presidency. And you've heard me say this many times, Bernaz, and many others also, that the talent and the passion and the commitment of everyone, whether it be Allison when I first started as, you know, as an advisor and board member than to you, Farnaz. You know, working with your staff, working with the leaders of the schools, as well as the talent and the commitment of those on the board. You know, I've been part of other boards throughout my life, profit and nonprofit, and I have to say this is the most talented, passionate, committed board, you know, that I've been a part of. So I just want to thank all of you around the table, figuratively and literally, for that, and for making it quite frankly easy to be a board president. And I don't say this lightly, but because of those characteristics, it is an easier board to be a part of, because the talent and what happens before we sit at this table is pretty significant, and I just feel lucky to be a part of it. So thank you, all of you.
Okay, thank you. May we move on to approve the agenda, but the opener.
No problem.
This is an example, Anthony, of what I need. I need a one-on-one assistance here.
Okay. I was there the first time as well, so you'll get better. Don't worry.
I know Jeremiah has been so kind and helpful to me, and also Farnaz when she's sitting next to me. But it's very different than being in the board meeting and running a board meeting. Okay, so presentations from the floor. Are there any presentations from the floor on non-agenda items?
None.
You know, here's what. I got a little confused because I thought we should go through this.
The mission. We jumped right over it. Yeah,
that's my fault. We jumped over the mission and the values, which are very important. So could someone please read the mission? Have a volunteer?
Sure.
I do.
Mission: reimagine public education in low-income communities of color to serve conscious, critical thinkers who are equipped to graduate from college and create a more equitable and sustainable world.
Values?
Oh, go ahead.
Justice: we examine bias, racism, and prejudice. We deliver culturally responsive curricula. We succeed when students' race and class cease to predict their level of achievement. Community: we care, we collaborate, we respect the rights and voices of our stakeholders. Curiosity: we question, we explore, we innovate. Sustainability: we think globally and act locally. We adapt, we encourage systems thinking to create a sustainable future. And leadership: we listen, we think critically, we advocate, we shift public discourse, we are our own superheroes.
Thank you. Now we'll return to 2B presentations from the floor on agenda items. Is there anyone who would like to speak on agenda items? Hearing none, we will move on to number 3, discussion items and updates. The first one is EdTech financial update and 24-25 budgets presentation. Dorothy and Jair.
Yeah, hi. Hold on. Let me just share my screen. Thank you. Okay. I'm going to go over the current year a little more quickly, because we just did this last week in finance committee, and just in case there are more questions about next year's budget, I just want to make sure I stay within my time. So this is just a snapshot of the current fiscal year and where we think we're going to end, and pretty much a improvement at all the schools except at the high school Gardena, and we can talk about that when we get to the school slide. Most of the schools for this current year update have similar changes. I think pretty much all of them have this SB 740 facilities grant increase just because we adjusted how much we were prorating. We increased the outlook for that for this year. And three of the four schools have this child nutrition equipment grant. Between the high schools, you'll see the sports bar. So this is because the sports program is getting run out of Lawndale. And now the high school in Gardena is paying back Lawndale for all the kids taking part of the activities, but the expenses are getting paid out of Lawndale. So that's where this is the income for Lawndale, because that's the high school paying it back. And then you'll see the opposite at the other high school. So those are the changes. And then this is the big payment back to Lawndale that you see at high school. I do, because we talked about it, feels like it was the last board meeting, but about the lease accounting and how I would just make a point to mention how at the high school Gardena, their cash out they pay in rent is, almost 800,000. We only recognize about 500,000. So there's this 300,000 that isn't getting shown as expense. And so when you compare it to this amount that we're predicting for the operating income for their year, you can see it's less than that amount. So that just gives you an idea of how we're spending more than we're bringing in for this current fiscal year. Even though it looks positive, but because of the way we have to treat the lease accounting, this is actually what is happening behind the scenes. This is the cash outlook for the year. All of these are actual balances through April. And then we're going to move to next year if there are any questions about this year.
Questions? No questions.
Okay. So since the last meeting, we got the numbers for the May revise, the latest and greatest that we're using and assuming for next year's budget. So the COLA is slightly up from the January proposal, just a teeny bit, but it does affect a number of different grants. So it's about $50 per ADA. Just to kind of just depends on the mix at at the school. And what's great is that there are no funding deferrals for next fiscal year, it looks like, as well as no new restricted programs or funds for now. The historical look at local control funding and the COLA that's been applied to it, and how much funding has increased, the last 5 years, and how next year this 1.07 is kind of, oh, I'm on the screen, is just not as impressive compared to especially the last 2 years. But the outlook is about.
Dorothy, can I chime in on this one for one
Sure.
second? So when you look at this chart and you see that this year that's a 1.07% increase for the COLA, this is the reason why this year we had to do a few reductions in force at all sites, because the increase was only 1% for the entire cost of living. But for teachers, our budget assumes a step and column of 2 to 3% automatically. Now, recently last year we implemented salary schedules for a majority of our classified employees. That also assumes 2 or 3%. So that difference, in addition to the fact that there was cuts in federal funding for COVID and led us to have to do one or two layoffs per site, we were really, or RIFs, reductions in force. We were really lucky because we were able to offer people other positions within the organizations that were vacated by other people for the most part. But that's sort of the impact of this. When the COLA is less than the automatic cost of living that's in our step and column, that's the outcome of it.
I don't get why they think even 1% is okay when, like, my coffee's gone up 20%. That doesn't compute.
I mean, I think it's just fair to recognize that when they gave us all this extra money a few years ago, there was a lot of transparency that this isn't a forever thing. And so some school districts,
sort of strategically got partners externally so they wouldn't have to do reductions in force. And some people gave a lot of extra money to their existing employees. We wanted to increase the services to our students, so we needed to bring additional people in order to do it. The contracting partners were never quite as effective as increasing employees. And we knew that when we went into that period that we would probably need to face cuts eventually. So I think, yeah, I mean, it's frustrating, and who could expect that, but there was some awareness that this was coming.
So how are the students affected now by that we've had to lay off some?
I mean, it's going to have an impact for sure. They are not student-facing positions. Okay. So the positions were primarily our instructional coaches. But our hope is that we'll be able to maintain the momentum that we have. I just wanted to explain how a chart like this will impact us years out even. So, sorry, Dorothy.
No, that was great. Okay, so these are the main funding assumptions for each school. So at Lawndale, it pretty much is consistent. Like if we compare the ADA we're expecting and where the schools ended at P2, which is the most important number, Lawndale looks pretty much similar, just slightly more conservative on the attendance percentage. At the middle schools, they're on par with each other and slightly higher attendance percentage. So we get to the slightly higher ADA. And then the high school Gardena, their ADA looks, you know, higher because they're adding 12th grade. And their attendance percentage is about the same as this year. I also included the LCFF rate for each of the schools. And you can see, even though they serve the same grades, they actually get different levels of funding. And that just depends on the population at the schools and where the school is located. So looking at Lawndale, at all the schools, you will see this big drop in federal revenue that Farnaz just mentioned. And this is because of the ESSER COVID money, and it ends September 30th. So environmental, we're spending it all by June 30th. And what has helped a lot for Lawndale is that you see this state revenues is going up. They have two new revenue sources. It's a CalSERVES grant and a Golden State Pathways. So obviously overall they have less revenue. So with that, they had to cut expenses. So most of this is in the comp and benefits, with the instructional coaches and some savings in books and supplies, which is mainly in computers. If you're looking at just kind of like percentage wise, like how that revenue is kind of spread across the year, like we have these graphs for each of the schools, I think it's more helpful, especially to see the expenses, mainly because if you're wondering like, oh, well, we cut these positions, but expense wise as a percentage of like total expense, it's very similar to how they were spending this current year. We have, you know, all these graphs for the schools, but you can see at middle school Gardena, their drop in federal revenue is almost $750,000. And we're showing some growth in the donations, and they have savings in all of the expense categories, pretty much, you know, less staff, less computers, less spending for substitutes and consultants. Similarly, the revenue and expense distribution, which is pretty also on par with what they did this year. And the same story for Englewood, except their federal revenue is even higher. And then this increase in state funds is we're using these one-time state funds that we purposely have held back from using. So that's why it looks like there's this increase compared to this year. And then they're spending less on things like software and computers, consultants, substitutes in marketing. Those similar graphs. And then at the high school, these numbers just look more wacky because they're growing and adding so many more kids. So it's more difficult to get a sense based on like whole dollars. And then the revenue, obviously, with the extra kids, the LCFF would be a bigger percentage. But they have a pretty close distribution as well. And then just to call out their lease accounting. So next year, their rent payment goes up. So, almost 865,000, but we only recognize the same amount across the years. So that's 376,000 that we're paying out that we don't see as an expense. That's why it's more important for the high school to show this higher operating income. And then just to look at cash, cash is definitely a little tight at the high school. And this does assume we will be using the line of credit. It really depends on the timing of the purchases and the capital expenditures. And Tracy and her team know, and we're definitely planning accordingly. Were there any questions?
I had a question about you said reduction in substitutes. Does that mean we've hired full time, or how do we
I could
assume?
speak to that. So, during COVID, especially just because of the expectation that people would be out more frequently, we experimented with having in-house subs. We thought if we have an in-house sub, then if someone needs to be out, then they can use the in-house sub. But what we realized is that during that same time, the number of sub hours used from external vendors stayed kind of similar, stayed flat. It didn't decrease the amount of external vendor hours we were using. So now we're experimenting with if you don't have an in-house sub, maybe you will not feel as compelled to be out on a day that you don't need to be out because you're not making the assumption that, oh, well, there's, Julia's here and I can rely on her to sub for me. And so then we're only paying for that external vending sub. So we tried that at all sites, and at all sites we saw the number of outs increase.
So actually more people were calling in sick when you
I
had
mean, there is
the
also the
information.
possibility that more people were out sick and there was more stress and all of that for sure, but there was some instances where we thought this is worth an experiment to see if we don't have an in-house sub, how it impacts our sub dollar line.
Yeah, a couple other items are just some of the substitute expense this year has been because of slow hires or leaves. So we adjust back up the full pay for the positions, and it may change, but it's usually a wash between, like, if someone goes on leave, it'll end up being a higher subs expense and a lower staffing expense. So that was part of it too, like leaves and slow hires. And then I think they're also one of the things they're going to experiment with at Middle School Gardena is they were using a lot of subs for para educators. And I believe they're going to try to have a floating para educator that, will decrease the para educator sub hours. So there was a big focus on how do we decrease sub spending in all the area.
Okay, thank
Okay, and any other questions or comments before we continue? None? Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Now we will
What
have
did you say?
Yeah, I can stand.
It's really no problem.
I can go here. I'll hold the floor here.
I'm going to turn my
We'll now
computer.
have
Can you guys see me here? Yes.
we'll have a report from Cindy Carvalho, and take it away.
Thank you. You said my last name really well. So I see a couple of like new faces. I'm Cindy. I'm the principal of ECHS Gardena. And I'm standing here because like there's a lot to like celebrate at Gardena. As we all know, we're going on to our fourth year, and so we're very excited about the work that we are doing and I just want to point to this picture real quick. This is our 11th grade class, our founding ninth graders 3 years ago, and they're rising to their senior year. This is also the class that started in the triplex building with only four classrooms. They spent 6 weeks at El Camino, and now, you know, they got to inaugurate the new building as well. And so now they're paving the way into what their senior year. And, like, there's something to marvel at. They have shown up. They are completely unrecognizable from year one. We couldn't get a hold of them. We couldn't get a hold of their attendance. They were always in tears. And right now that they're rising up to their senior year, they're just like beautiful humans to look at. They're thinking about college. They got their act together, you know. And I'm going to talk about data in a little bit, but, like, they're really showing up for themselves, and they're making us really proud as they're navigating their high school career. ECHSG has life now. We started with only 112, I think. We're at like 300 and something now, and we're projecting 450 for this upcoming year. And so our hallways are filled, but we're also taking the opportunity to take them to college field trips. Intercession has come alive this year. We launched Intercession in all three grade levels at like capacity as well. Our educators are being more aware of, you know, what instruction should really look like in their spaces. And it doesn't matter where you go, there's always something happening. And I know that we had a really tricky start to this year with behavior and whatnot. If you haven't heard about it, we are not going to dwell on it, but we made it over the hump. And it's a true testament to the work that everyone's doing at our site, and also, like, the ECS vision for not only replicating ECHSL, but also refining what ECHSL is supposed to, like, work on. I think it's a great opportunity for us to have partnered with ECHSL, and it finally feels like we're at a point where we can offer something to them as opposed to just taking. We can finally, like, begin to partner. In the next slide, it's a highlight of some of the things that we've done culturally. Like I said, we've taken the opportunity to refine a lot of the things, and so that comes with our restorative practices, you know, kind of like refining the process. We want to believe in the whole child. We want to not only, like, support them academically, but also in what they need to be successful. And the more grade levels that we've opened, the more we're starting to feel like, oh, snap, like, year one we had one child, and then we had another baby, and our babies didn't know what to do, like, because now mom has to be shared, and, like, my uncle got to be shared. And so we're kind of, like, navigating all of that. And so there's been some bumps along the way, but we've definitely, like, put in the work to think about not only what Gardena needs so that we can better serve our students and, like, support our teachers, but also how can this support ECS at a school, at a district-wide level? And I feel like there's been a lot more collaboration from our AP of instruction to our special teacher title?
Our director.
There you go. Yeah, in addition to that, we invested a little more time into, like, our school culture this year. And so we've had more monthly assemblies where we not only review the expectations for the site, but we also do a lot of celebrations and competitions. ECS is all about every child feeling like it's a blessing, and our data was showing that they were feeling a little disconnected, and so we put in the effort to make sure that they feel connected to somebody, or at least connected to their advisory, especially leading into a fourth year, right? We're also creating more opportunities for fun in the community. We have competitions. We're trying to bring our social media alive. We have a media club. Enrichment this year also allowed us to play with a little bit of, like, culture. And even though it's been a learning experience, we've seen a lot of our students stepping up to that creative side of ECS. And we're starting to not only develop students that are academically strong, but also students that are really proud of their site, and they're showing up for it in many different spaces. We've also never taken the pulse or the touch away from, like, our instruction. I consider myself a really big, like, instructional leader, and so it's been really awesome to see how that has transpired into different spaces. One of the things that we implemented this year is the academic coaching sessions. As opposed to rely on our counselors to just do a lot of SEL and do, like, wellness check-ins, we're relying on them to do more academic check-ins. And so instead of having, when students are failing more than two classes, they're identified, and conversations with parents are held. And now they have after-school sessions with the counselors so that they can look at the soft skills of navigating obstacles.
how is it that they can remain fully engaged? Because at a high school level, sometimes when they fail one class, it just becomes a trickle effect, right? And suddenly, they were a few days behind, now it's 2 weeks, and now they're just giving up. And so we want to make sure that we can beat them to the punch and support them as best as we can. And we're also, like, really thinking about our mission, and that's, you know, life after high school, and how is it that we can help them remain sustainable and, like, remain in college. And so we're trying to equip them with as many skills as possible so that they know how to leverage those when they're no longer in high school. And so we've created like new documents so that we can support them. Our parents have been really grateful. And that has translated into like high achieving scores. For our first year at CASP, we scored at 72 proficiency for ELA, which even though, you know, like we can always do better, right? For a founding class, that's pretty amazing. Like we're really proud of that founding class that we showed you at the beginning, the ones that we couldn't get a hold of, they're showing up. They're showing up. We still have some work to do in math, clearly at 16%, but it's only a baseline. And I think as soon as we saw the scores, we came together with these math specialists. We're having conversations with Danielle, and we're trying to figure out what is it that we're going to do differently for the incoming class of ninth graders, but also what supports we're going to be giving our 10th and 11th graders so that we can support them in their like math identity. That and it also comes with like our new priority with ECS and like being more intentional about metacognition and just to like equipping the vast number of green educators that we have at our site. And so, you know, going into next year, kind of like being more intentional about what the role of every human is, because there's no room for us to like not take action on the data that we're seeing. And then also, we're really proud of our partnership with El Camino. First, we used them so that we could have classrooms for 6 weeks, mm-hmm. but now we're actually maximizing our dual enrollment, and we have more than 40 students enrolled in dual classes. And so these are some of the courses that we have, but we have children that are speaking about graduating high school and having an AA by the time they graduate high school. And so we're definitely paving the way. Our 11th grade counselor this year has really taken this on really serious, kind of like shifted his identity from being an SEL counselor to being an academic counselor. I think he's feeling the weight of like being a junior counselor and understanding how pivotal his role is at the site, that he's like being more enthusiastic and more applied in supporting our students with the college process. We also just had transition meetings with our parents for senior year. We had a meeting with Farnaz about an upcoming Bay Area trip with 50 of our seniors and sophomores. And so we are definitely starting to like navigate the senior year in collaboration with Mondale, of course. Lucy has been navigating that world for a number of years now. And so I'm just really excited to be in a place where we get to open up a senior year and graduate our first class next year. So this time next year will be a whole different conversation. And
sorry.
Like I said, like I didn't want to take too much time, but there is a lot to like celebrate. These are just like our regular end of semester certificates of recognition, and we're hoping that they become high school diplomas. I have to say that I became a parent recently, and I told Farnaz that coming back as a parent now has allowed me to understand that there's no time to waste. There are parents who have trusted their children to sit on our chairs, and so I've come back with even more of a desire to do right by them, and that comes with like just understanding what my role is as an instructional leader and what I have to do to like pave the way for every child and out of Gardena. So.
Yes. With the enrollment of the new class that is coming in, how did we do in terms of diversity? I know we reached out to different communities, and if that has made any difference.
Well, ECHS Gardena is our most diverse campus, mm-hmm. and it's most representative of the broader community. We have the highest percentage of African American students and the highest percentage of students with exceptionalities or disabilities. Mm-hmm. So it is a campus that is very representative and also in some ways draws some of the higher need students in our in our founding years mm-hmm. as a founding school, people who are willing to take a risk on a founding school are often the people who've really struggled in the existing systems, and they're like, I'll try it. This hasn't been working for my child. Maybe this will work. So it's very representative, and our I want to celebrate Monse Garcia, who's soon also going on maternity leave, but she has helped to bring our outreach efforts together at the home office level and has done a phenomenal job. So we have more than 100% enrollment for next year mm-hmm. at all sites, and it was a huge achievement.
Yeah. So. It's the first time we have a wait list of over 40 students in the ninth grade level.
Wow.
I think also in terms of diversity, we also have a really diverse staff. And whenever we do orientation events, like different staff members come out, and so it's really easy for families to see themselves mm-hmm. reflected in our like staff.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Great to hear.
Yeah. Thank you. Anything else?
I wanted to share an appreciation. So this 2 weeks ago, the 11th grade team had prepared for intercession these presentations of if they were running a politician running for office, either mayor or governor or something like that, what would their platform be? They went and did surveying of their local community. They talked about what the main issues are and how they were going to address it. And we had this really great experience where Ben Allen came in and had a chance to hear a bunch of the students do their presentation and then talked about Senator Ben Allen and then talked about his own platform and his experience. And it was so beautiful.
Yeah.
I wanted to appreciate, like, it was one of those great moments for true interdisciplinary instruction and seeing how the kids, how it clicked for the kids mm-hmm. was really beautiful.
Yeah.
So.
Thank you
for
that.
You know, just listening to you talk, I mean, it's just so inspiring. It reminds me of when I first came to ECS, and I don't even know when that was, like maybe 2011 or 2012. That was a long time ago, and I don't think anyone in this room was here at the time. And I remember listening to the head of curriculum and the head of the high school, you know, the original high school at the time. I was like, there's something wrong with their approach, like their attitude. Like they had like some kind of affect about them that was very much like me-centric, like that they were like in it for like themselves and they were protective of their ego and everything. And I joined because, you know, I believed in Alice and I believed in the mission and everything. And little by little, like that came to light more and more. And I think this just highlights what Anthony said at the beginning. And what I heard you say, like, you all are so professional and so focused on the kids. You have the right, your goal and your mindset is in the right place. That our service is to the kids, not to us. You know, we have to, there's other stakeholders in the mix, but first and foremost, it's to the kids. And I really want to thank you for having that ethos, because it makes a difference and it comes through and it changes how we all come to the table and think about ECS.
Yeah.
All right, thank you.
Thanks for
doing
it. Okay. 2024-25 Local Control Accountability Plan.
I'm going to start, but that's not fair to go after that. Really not fair. Well, I'm going to try and make LCAP fun.
Jen, can we pause for a second?
Yes.
I want to welcome you guys to grab some food if you want. If you need to pause for a second and get some food, anybody?
Get some food because we're going to talk data.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Danielle, for
your great suggestion.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, of course.
And I just, sorry.
Yeah.
Got it. All right, let's see.
Oh, no, thank you for running. I appreciate it.
We were trying to find a different place.
I appreciate it.
Can I pause the recording for a second while
sure.
Thank you.
Okay, it's recording. Thank you.
Right. I'm glad everybody has the food. I'm going to talk some data. I'm going to make LCAP fun. I have to tell you.
You go, Jen.
Work. It's a labor of love, and starting March, I totally dread it. And then April, May, June, I live for it. And the people in this office can attest to that. It's like a big research paper. And what the LCAP is it's a three-year, it's a three-year annual report. It tracks our goals, it tracks our benchmarks, it tracks how we're spending our funds in order to meet those benchmarks. Schools are required to produce these. We also have to make them public. We have to gain stakeholder input. And while the reporting is done once a year in June, that doesn't mean that it's the only time that we look at this information. You've seen that mid-year report. We are constantly analyzing and collecting data to ensure that we are really meeting our mission and we are providing the best services to our students so we then in turn have the best outcomes. As I mentioned, it is a three-year plan. These are the three goals that we selected 3 years ago. So you have seen them a few times before. They have not changed. It's improved outcomes, culture of care, facilities, and operations. They align with Department of Education priorities with respect to state standards and student proficiency, as well as ECS's own mission and vision. While the benchmarks for schools can vary, because obviously student population varies, these goals are consistent. We've seen some overall themes, and this is a slide that's probably familiar to you. Every year, there are some things that stick out. We are closing the achievement gaps. Last year, we really focused on tiered interventions and supports, both in ELA and math. And we'll go through this data. You'll start seeing that each school has seen some growth with different groups of students, both in their proficiency as well as their distance from standards. Our students are feeling much more connected. They are feeling valued. They feel safe. They are feeling like there is a trusted adult on campus, and that's a huge win considering the distance learning and how we started when we came back to in-person instruction. And we're seeing still consistent high course passage rates and GPAs. We are also seeing some overall needs. Again, this is not something that's necessarily unfamiliar, but our needs do change from year to year. We do need to continue addressing academic disparities. We are still seeing chronic absenteeism, and I want to just touch on that. It's not COVID-related anymore. Last year, we could really define that as COVID-related. And by chronic absenteeism, I am showing a 94-95% attendance rate, which by all means is pretty spectacular. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Compared to other districts, this is phenomenal. They would you know, strive for this amount.
Yeah.
It's lower than we want, but this is really a great, you know, a great number. And I think a lot of that has to do with what our social work team is doing. This year, we did almost 3,000 interventions to make sure our students were at school and they were in, you know, in-person learning. And we know that that makes a huge difference. We are seeing some mental health issues and disciplinary issues. Again, this is not specific to ECS per se. You talk to other districts in California as well as nationally, and this is, I think, a huge product of COVID and your distance learning. This year, we had over 25,000 mental health one-on-one supports. Cesar and his team have been really, really diligent about working with our students, doing these check-ins, making sure that they get the resources and the help they need. But that's a lot. That's a lot. And I think then going forward for grants, we're going to start looking for other funding opportunities to help this. Remember, last year we got that grant from California Department of Education to fund our social workers for 2 years. So this is really where our, you know, the money's going. We are seeing some fights and some risky behavior. Dr. Guardado alluded to that. And as a result, we have created this restorative practice working group really to find alternatives to the hearings, the administrative hearings, to suspensions, to, you know, expulsions, because we don't want that.
We haven't had any expulsions.
Nope, we have not had any.
I'm just going to chime in for one second on this slide. So the 94%, those of you who have been here for a long time know that we budgeted historically at a 97% attendance rate. So that has several hundred thousand dollars of impact on our budget. That difference from 94 to 97, it's something we are still pushing to get higher. Even though we're better than other districts and we celebrate that, it's something we need to really improve. In terms of the mental health issues that are at hand, I strongly recommend, if you haven't heard of it, there's a book called The Anxious Generation, but there's also a ton of podcasts about it. The author is Jonathan Haidt. He's been on a ton of podcasts, and it's about how cell phones are impacting this generation. And you may have heard this week, LAUSD decided to go cell phone free. We'll see how it goes. But these are things that are really impacting all districts. It's like every single time superintendents, principals come together, they talk about the behavioral issues, the anxiety levels, and how do we address it. So I just wanted to chime in on that one. Thank you.
Any questions? Okay, we're going to start getting into the data. This is where we're going to geek out. But before I get into it, I just want to explain how we analyze the data so we are all on the same page. Our students take the California Assessment, Student Performance Progress, known as CAS. They take it in middle school three times, 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, and in high school they only take it in 11th grade. So for middle school, we can really analyze cohort to cohort. In high school, it's hard because it's not an apples-to-apples comparison. When we're looking at the data, I think this is a really great chart. A student or a group of students who may achieve minus 50, right? That's what you'll see, a negative number. That means they are below the standard. A positive number means that they have met the standard or they've exceeded the standard. So I just wanted to talk about that just so we're all on the same page. Are we good? All right, let's talk about Lawndale first. We're going to talk about each school with GLOWs and GROWs. The GLOWs are some great information. The GROWs is where we're also going to concentrate going forward. Last year, if you remember back in June, we talked about our African American students and needing additional interventions and supports for both ELA and math. Look at the improvement that we've made. We were at negative 98. So that means they were 98 points below the standard, and this year we are 100 points above the standard. That's a huge increase. I also want to make a note, and there's a caveat to this, and that's why there's an asterisk next to the zero. Remember what I said, high school students, they only take it in 11th grade. So we could have had one African American student take this test last year and score below the standard, whereas this year there could have been 3, 4, 5 students, and this is the score. So it's a little, I want to be honest,
but
we are still seeing growth. We are still seeing improvement. We're still seeing how our MTSS supports are being applied, and we're seeing results.
I mean, that's a big enough swing that it can be attributed to more than just one student taking it. But still, that's remarkable that there's that hang up in the data.
We are seeing
they're not the same students, right?
Not the same students.
So this is junior year last year against junior year this year. So last year's junior year class, some of us went to the graduation this year. There weren't very, very many African American students.
So one person scored.
So that could be very few last year. Mm-hmm. Apparently this year there are more African American students, and so more representation.
And they all did very well.
Amazingly well.
So, again, it's a caveat, but look at this distance from standard growth. Look at this proficiency.
Yeah.
Really remarkable. Some grow points are students with exceptionalities dropped, 30-plus points distance from standard. So going forward, we're going to want to concentrate. We're going to see what interventions and what supports are needed to help bring that score back up. Also, our Hispanic-Latino students dropped ever so slightly, so we're going to want to concentrate there. Any questions on that data?
Is that also, with that caveat, they're measuring
exactly.
So, for example, last year we could have had a majority of our student population below need, and then this year have more students who are mild, moderate to severe instead of mild to moderate.
Correct.
So there could be a different student population, and that's not reflected in this data, but this is how it's looked at nonetheless, so we're sharing it with you the same
it's
way.
It's the number of students in students with is that also?
It also shifts.
It also shifts.
Okay. And that's the one sort of issue, I think, with our CAS data, not with the data itself, but how we're required to report. NWEA allows you to follow a cohort so you can really make a more apples-to-apples comparison.
And
so
Denise
has a question, I think.
Finish. Okay.
Just one thing to note is starting next year, what we will be able to do is show you how those 11th graders did the last time they took CAS, which would have been in 8th grade.
Right.
This class, they didn't take it because their 8th grade was spent online.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
we do have a way to measure progress from the last time they took it, and that is one of our metrics that we include in the LCAP. So you'll start to see that. It's just that this current crop of kids, not all of them took CAST in eighth grade because their eighth grade was during this, you know, this COVID stretch. What's your question, please?
So I've heard you use the expression kids with exceptionalities. And so how do you define that? And is that a term that's used at ECS?
I think actually we're trying to move away from it. That's a funny thing. So
for a period of time,
we had gotten some recommendation to refer to students with disabilities as students with exceptionalities. And a group of our leaders are now participating in a professional development program called the All Means All. Mm-hmm. And they are strongly recommending the use of the word students with disabilities.
Yep.
Because there's a whole disability rights movement that has worked really hard to help increase awareness and engagement around the issues relating to human beings with disabilities. And so when we call them students with exceptionalities, one person we met with today said, that would make me feel better as a parent. Maybe you should use it with parents. It may have that impact.
Are we talking about learning differences, or are we also talking about physical disabilities?
Both.
Okay.
And the exceptionalities actually sometimes makes people feel othered more so than, you know, saying, like, celebrating a person for who they are, right? So if I have a disability, I'm celebrated for having a disability. But you call it an exceptionality, then now you've othered me in a way that I'm exceptional, but it's a weird way of nuance of saying, like, well, you're exceptional. But now you just, well, what makes me exceptional? It's my disability. Well, why don't you just tell me how my disability is my superpower?
It's kind of like covering in a way.
It is. And that's what we find. I mean, we find it in a lot of different areas of like society and again, workplaces as well.
What if we said students with different abilities?
Actually, if I may add something, my previous life, as you may know, was in affordable housing, and we created affordable housing, an initiative specifically for this population, more adult with developmental disabilities. And within the affordable housing world, they're referred to as IDD, which is individuals with developmental disabilities or adult with developmental disabilities. It may be something to think about. Because it's a standard term in different, you know, in other industries.
Individuals with developmental disabilities.
IDD or ADD. These are not necessarily adults, although you could view it as ADD, but IDD is, you know, spans a larger spectrum of humans, I would say.
Okay. I think, like, the main gist is, and I think you all as our board have been part of this historically, like, we as an organization have, and not just us, like, society, there's a tendency to use euphemistic language to talk about things that are uncomfortable or that you don't want to actually confront. And as an organization, I think we have made a commitment, and you see it in our mission statement, in our values, to be honest and descriptive in our language about what we do and why we do it. And I think, and I've argued and advocated that I think students with exceptionalities is a way in which we have fallen into this euphemistic hiding, avoiding, talking about what we do and what is real. I'm part of the group that's going to this All Means All training, and one of the arguments they make that I think is the most compelling is that when you think about our parents whose kids have disabilities, from whatever age they've received this diagnosis or assessment status, they've been using the term disability. Mm-hmm. When they come to us and we start using the word exceptionality, and then we train and their children who are in this formative stage of life to use those terms, when they go to college and they talk about their exceptionality, that may or may not actually mean anything to them, and it will not serve them in advocating for themselves. And so using language that is universally understood is better for them and may be more uncomfortable for us or for us as a society. But I think, like, if we really want to support our kids and their families and their ability to navigate the world, we can't
we've got to use words that are descriptive and unapologetic about what we're doing.
Well, yeah, it's like people first language, right? So instead of saying this is, here's an autistic kid, this is a kid or a child with autism, mm-hmm. right? So you're making like the people part of it first. Mm-hmm. And in that case, I think it's the use of the word disability is actually very much more empowering than it is to say an exceptionality. Because like, again, like the euphemistic piece to it feels almost, I know it's the idea of making us feel inclusive, but it's actually almost more exclusionary to some point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like we don't want to talk about
that.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Go back to
chat. Wait, real quick, I had a question about data.
Yeah.
So we're reporting on, when you report out, you report on percentage increases and whatnot, but you also have to report on the raw number of folks in the cohort, right? So that the caveat that we talked about the year from 22-23 to 23-24, that's also denoted in the actual raw number of folks who took the test. Okay.
Yeah, the absolute value number that Jen is referring to, the negative 98 and the 105.5, this is the average distance from standard.
The average distance from standard, but it doesn't say anything about the number of participants going into that average.
Not here.
Yeah, but you have to report the raw number as
Okay.
Gardena, Dr. Guardado talked about this. This is the first time the high school in Gardena has taken CAS tests. So effectively, this is our baseline. Next year, we'll be able to compare it to the sophomores who will be juniors. 72% of our kiddos are proficient in English. That's a huge, huge number. As Dr. Guardado said, 15% proficient in math, that's definitely something that we want to work on. Yeah. But what I want to show you, and this is what I think is really important, our kids are coming to us at a very, very low norm. When you're looking at the national norm, which is that gray number, right? Our kids in each one of those lines represents one of the classes. The light blue is the junior going to be senior class. And then that darker blue is the sophomores going to be juniors, and that orange is that freshman going to be sophomores. So look at where they're coming into us, and look at how much they've gone up.
Yeah.
Each testing period from ninth grade winter to 10th grade fall to 11th grade, you see an incredible increase. What that tells us is what we're doing is working.
Yeah.
So yes, you had 15% here, but look at how much we've closed that achievement gap. So I think that's a really remarkable.
And your slopes are like you see the younger and then the freshmen and the sophomores.
So it's a great, this is a great sort of understanding of where they're coming from and what we're doing.
Yeah, that's a great frame of reference there because, you, like, to your point, to seeing the slope is of the progress is important, you know,
Absolutely.
I think. Yeah.
I also just noticed something on this one. So it's just recognizing that where our students at this founding school are coming to us upon entry and how it's going to change over time. So what we said is some of the students that are drawn to a school in its founding year are higher needs or are struggling more. Mm-hmm. Where will the school students that come in the future, how is that going to look relative to this in the chart is going to be interesting as well.
Yeah, at Lonsdale, students, depending on the subject, are coming in at or just below or sometimes above that national norm.
At the 230.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, like, it just, even though Cindy's replicating the same model, the student population and where they're coming in terms of preparation from middle school from Lonsdale like is quite different than where they're coming into ECHSG from.
Are we noticing that the population that goes to the Gardena High School are more and more of them coming from our middle schools now, or is it still whatever the population is?
Yeah, more and more of our Gardena Middle School students are going there directly. Inglewood, not at the same rate because it's too far from their homes, but yes.
And even at the graduation, we had the Gardena High School folks at the Gardena Middle School graduation, so parents could really feel the sense of, oh, here is a great place.
Yeah.
Right? It was a beautiful sort of pass off from one campus to the next.
Can you go back one?
Of course I can.
One more. I just want to point out the performance of African American students in ELA.
Phenomenal.
So, like, that's, we've never seen that level of proficiency at Lawndale even, for Black students. So just, even Parnas mentioned ECHSG has the highest percent of African American students. That's exciting from an enrollment perspective, but from a performance and an achievement perspective, it's also really exciting. Mm. So back to when Cindy said, like, she finally feels like she has something that she can offer and teach other schools. Mm-hmm. That was an example of how to ensure excellent achievement for Black students. We just got to do it in math.
And we will. Okay, this is, again, where I'm going to geek out a little bit. Because at the middle school, our kids are taking the test in 6th, 7th, and 8th, we can follow them as a cohort. We can see where they came to us, and we can see how we're graduating them out. Our kids in 6th grade were 34 points below the standard. We are basically right at standard when they graduate. In math, you see the same increase. And I just think that's a really remarkable thing. It just goes to show you that our interventions, our supports, our teaching, our best practices, it really does make a difference. Our GLOW
and
our
visually, can you go back a second?
Yeah.
Visually, it should be going. Visually,
you're
saying
negative. It's negative from
it's getting
the
black
getting
negative.
Okay.
34 points.
Yeah,
remember that big graph?
34
but
points.
That's
getting closer to zero.
Is that a positive thing?
It's a positive thing. Which is why we have it in green, not red.
Yeah, that's like counterintuitive. Like, graphically to me. Well, it's interesting also, like, I think just in reading it, because I read it as the color sky-wise, well, that's good. Angling-wise, interesting. But, like, maybe there's, I would say if there's a way to footnote what that standard is, just to set that baseline, because it feels a little, like it needed to be explained.
Yeah, visually, visually, your eye goes to that it's going down.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing,
because
I realize it's a good thing, because
it's a
visual
thing.
It's going
up.
It's only a going down.
It's
physically.
It's a
really going
six,
up
seven,
by
eight.
Virtue of the fact that it's going down.
The number, the point
like
away from the
yeah.
point
yeah.
shrinking,
yeah.
which means you're getting closer to the
scene. All right, let's look at some specific groups. Okay. Last year, we really concentrated on our African-American students based on the data. And look, you can see huge increases. They went from negative 19 points below the standard to basically at standard.
Okay.
We saw that in both English and math. I want to go to the GROW, and I just want to point this out. The 36% proficiency to 33% proficiency, this is so negligible. We are talking a few points distance from standard. Again, it could be the student groups. But it's something we want to watch.
Yeah.
You're saying those are English learners?
Yes.
Or
these are English
ELA.
Learners. Yeah.
Okay. English
exactly.
Learners.
There's real, there's not, it's a plus or minus here, but I just did want to point it out because if you look at the data from last year to this year, there was a decrease.
Yeah.
So I want to be transparent and honest.
But even similarly, even on the slide that had all the different slopes with regard to the national average, there was still variance like this as
sure.
the trajectory
yep.
goes up. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's pretty normal. Nothing goes completely.
Yeah,
so ECMS Gardena was selected for differentiated assistance this year, which means that on two or more measures, we had reds on our dashboard, on our state dashboard. And so if you look at this, you can see that for our English learners, these are the two areas that were red. Our chronic absenteeism rates were red, and they had grown over time. And our English learners also did not do as well on their English language arts and their math scores. So this led to differentiated assistance, which means that we would get additional assistance from, it would be LACO if we were authorized by another authorizer. But since we were authorized by Los Angeles County Office of Education, our differentiated assistance was provided by Kern County.
Okay.
And Kern County met with us extensively towards the end of this year with a group that included Dave and Jessica and me and three educators from his site, and we went very deep into the data for English learners and created very specialized plans for how to improve student outcomes specifically at ECMS Gardena. And that team is going to also be getting assistance from, I referenced All Means All, which is this professional development partnership that Danielle, Dr. Shalene Wright, Charity Rock, and Dave are all participating in. And that's also, instead of doing the entire differentiated assistance coaching support through Kern County, we're being handed off to All Means All to do that work together. And so if you go, these are the steps that we decided that we were going to take. It was a lot about engagement of families to reduce chronic absenteeism, early communication, bringing parents in for mandatory meetings early on to talk about how it's important to come in person, and really reflecting it in our communications early on when we have a more captive audience at the beginning of the school year. But also really focusing on tier one interventions. Our priority for this year, if you guys remember, is going to be along the lines of reading apprenticeship. And that's very much going to focus on helping all teachers to teach better. And that's what's going to help us to help our English language learners. Reading apprenticeship is also very much aligned with best practices for EL students.
I want to show you some cohort data again, just because you're geeking out with me. Our sixth graders to eighth graders, they were 55 points below the standard when they came to us in sixth grade, and now they're 10 points below the standard. They're effectively right there. In math, you see similar growth, 103 to 73. We are still below the standard, and we acknowledge that, and we are working towards meeting the standard, but we are seeing this growth and this proficiency increase. Here's what's interesting. The steps that Farnaz was explaining in differentiated assistance with our English learners, look at the growth that we're seeing. So last year they were 82 points below the standard. This year they're 72 points below the standard. They've even increased in their proficiency. That's both English and math. So we're seeing that what we're doing, again, these interventions, the Reading Apprentice framework, the common assessments, all of the supports that we put into place and that we will continue to focus specifically on this group of students, will have an impact and has had an impact.
And that's without the change in the chronic absenteeism?
That's without the changes implemented from the differentiated assistance. This is the work that happened already this year. And also, like Dave is really excited to report that there are no two reds on his chart this year. So that we're not, again, qualifying for differentiated assistance, which is exciting.
Okay. I think it's just worth pointing out that the differentiated assistance like kicked in the spring, but to get these results, that's because we saw this data last year and we acted on it even before the differentiated support came through. So, you know, I think we have a really strong data team that helps us be able to see this quickly and then turn that into action.
Huge celebration for African American students in math who are 128 points below the standard and moved over 25 points. That's a big increase. So I want to point that out. We do need to work on our ELA, but again, with the Reading Apprentice framework, we expect to see those scores to go up. Any questions on data? I promise the data and the numbers, it's coming to an end. As we talked about earlier today with Dorothy, we have our budgeted expenditures and our actual expenditures. This is, you know, it's reported based on our three goals. A couple things that I want to point out. Hopefully you all read the LCAP, so you saw some of the descriptions in there. The second little bullet there, Sped Ed PD and compliance to provide additional support with inclusion, ELA, and math, that was an edit that was made after the reports posted. So I just wanted you all to know that there was a difference between what you saw and if you go back to those actual LCAPs, excuse me, that's going to be an update. Culture of care. Our outdoor ed costs have gone up. If you remember, with COVID, we couldn't go on overnights because we couldn't be in cabins. We couldn't have more than three kids. So now, I mean, look at ECMS Gardena. They were at Pali for 3 days. Those costs obviously increase. And we are working on grants, and we will talk about that shortly. Operations and facilities. We had some increases in our costs with base curriculum, School nutrition is a really interesting one. We have to provide school meals, and we know that we don't want our kids hungry, but we also want to provide exciting and enticing and great food options. We recently changed our food vendor, and that's why we've had some increases in school nutrition. And the kids participated in that vendor choice. So it was a really kind of interactive process.
Fun.
Yeah. Engaging partners is a huge component of the LCAP. These are the three stakeholder groups that we concentrate on. Obviously, community partners are in there as well, but these are the three main. And we do informal, we do formal. There are multiple opportunities to collect feedback. Parent-teacher conferences is a great one. Even though that's informal, it's a really wonderful way to see how we're doing and how we're meeting our goals. Here is the staff survey, some results that actually just came out. We don't survey our staff all the time. ECS does do a lot of surveys, which is why we decided not to do a staff survey every single year, but we did one this year, and these are some of the results. Most of our sites, most of our employees believe that we promote professional personnel participation in decision-making. What's really interesting, and I will say this to this group, 63% at the middle school Gardena. Ironically, they're the only site that does not have a union representative at the table, which is really interesting. And they have a lot of interactive feedback. And I think Mr. Trejo does a phenomenal job of engaging his staff. So that was an interesting one for us to see. We are supportive, we are safe, and we are an inviting place for students to learn. Again, that's 78 at the middle school Gardena. That's not shocking. I think that has to do with actually the area surrounding the school. This year, a couple times, the school went on shelter in place because of incidents around the campus. So I think that attributed to that percentage because the other ones were in that 91-92%. In conclusion.
See, I kind of did.
We've had a great year. There is a lot to be proud of. LACO comes to visit our sites every single year, and this year, I think visit after visit, our schools just did better and better. And the board actually visited the high school in Gardena because of our approach to student engagement and school operations, so that's a big highlight. 100% student enrollment. I don't think we ever had that, and a lot of that goes to Monse and the efforts that she's put into recruiting. We have received some new funding from California Department of Education. In May, we received three really big grants that I'm so proud of. The first one was for a service learning grant. I applied for the 12th grade at Lawndale, and it allows the seniors to get basically a gold seal on their diploma so long as they do this service learning component, which is what we already do. So I think the award was $381,000 for Outdoor Edge, huge chunk. We also received two pathway grants. This is something brand new. This is the CTE. This is our kids, as Dr. Guardado was talking about. They are graduating with these certificates. They are graduating with these degrees. They are graduating with 12 post-secondary units. So when they go to college, they are 12 units at least in.
Wow.
It brings down your tuition costs. It allows you to explore other options. And that's not even counting APs. So we received the CTE Pathways grant at both of our high schools, and that was $200,000 each. So huge, huge amount. And then we're continuing to focus on our sustainability efforts. I love this picture. It's from the middle school in Gardena. It was on the Pali trip, and it just goes to show you that what we're doing is making a difference. That's it. Thanks for the LCAP. Any questions?
Everyone memorized everything.
Yeah. Refreshers.
When's
the
quiz?
Hey, Farnaz, can you admit me into my iPhone?
Oh, no. Oh, sorry.
Anthony, you missed all my data.
No, I watched everything.
Over it.
No, I watched everything, but my battery's dying.
Oh. No questions? We asked questions along the way. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, moving on. Is it okay to move on?
Yeah.
Okay, public hearing. Public hearing regarding the actions and expenditures proposed in each of ECS's schools 24-25. Wait, did we just do that? This is the public hearing. Local control and accountability plan. So,
I'm not sure what we actually do.
This would in general be the Q&A portion or you pushing us on something that you saw in that presentation that wasn't good enough. And I just want to, we don't have, I was thinking about this really. Like we used to have a few board members who'd come into these meetings and be like, that's just not good enough. And I want to recognize that what we showed is not good enough, honestly, for our students. Like, we're super excited about the growth that we're seeing, and we're grateful for it, but we recognize that those gaps, those below-standard students who are, you know, 15% proficiency or 27% proficiency, that's not preparing them for college. We're getting them into college at high rates, and we need to do a better job. So I just want to, before we open up for public hearing, let you know that we are 100% aware of the urgency. We're also conscious that the students are coming in at very lower levels, and we have a lot of growth to do. You saw the growth trajectories that we're proud of, but we're constantly thinking about how to increase that incline and to really close the gap for our students. So.
Yeah, I mean, it is interesting when I think back, and we did have people who are, you know, very gung-ho on you're below average, like, so that's the only thing I'm seeing, that's the only thing I'm focused on. But since that era, we've also implemented, you know, justice and equity standards. We've also gone through training where we know to prioritize the whole student and the growth of the whole student. And we also know that we want to prepare kids for college, but they don't have to go to college. And so I do think a little bit the ethos has changed from those days, and I'm glad that you are aware of it and focused on it. I think continuous improvement is the name of the game for any organization, but at the same time, I also want to give a nod to, like, the ethos has changed, and we are about, like, the whole student, and sometimes that means giving up a little bit of the number to fix, you know, culture and climate on campuses or whatnot, so that they feel safe, so that they feel like they have an advocate on campus.
I agree with you, but I also feel that when students are in classrooms where they have rigorous instruction that's engaging, they feel cared for and they are developed on a wellness front at a higher rate than when they're not challenged and supported. So I think that strengthening our instruction and the priority for this year around reading apprenticeship framework will address that.
Do you think there's been places where you haven't been rigorous and that's why you're
it's a effort consistently to strengthen teaching. We get 2 to 3 candidates per position. Our teaching positions, and frequently the teachers that we hire have less experience than the teachers at many of our local districts do. Local districts sometimes get 50 to 100 candidates for a teaching position, and so they get to pick people with a lot more experience. And those first few years of teaching are overwhelmingly hard, and it requires a lot of professional development. So, yes, our classrooms could be more rigorous, and our teaching could be more engaging, and that's a challenge that I think Danielle manages in a really beautiful way, and she has a very strong team of specialists, and we're getting better at, and so that's why you're seeing the growth that you're seeing. But I think, like, pushing us on this is appropriate. This is the ultimate challenge for us. If we're going to send kids to college, we need to prepare them.
Are we doing anything to develop a pipeline of teachers or looking at certain areas?
Well, you know, a couple of years ago we had a partnership with Alder where we were hoping that some of our paraeducators would get trained to be teachers and we would have that pipeline. But at the time, very few of our paraeducators had their BAs or were interested in teaching. And the ones who weren't really that interested in special education positions, which were the biggest gap for us. We redid that survey, and this time around, most of our paraeducators have BAs, and a lot of them are interested. So
7 to 8.
Yeah, which is
which is tremendous.
Have you ever talked to Teach for America to explore partnership
placement
with their pipeline?
Actually, they're younger teachers anyways who do Teach for America.
In the beginning, but some do stay, and they do get the experience, that's for sure. I mean, you wouldn't, but I don't know, but it'd be, maybe be worth talking to someone just to explore their whole program and understand it and see if there's something there may or may not be.
So historically, Teach for America, a lot of the data goes to support that they're really a tremendous leadership development program. So they recruit from some of the top Ivies and institutions, and then they bring them into communities like ours, and those they feel inspired, and they become really strong leaders. And actually, Jane Weish is a Teach for America teacher. There's one other human being.
There's a number. Our current department chair at ECHSG, like, we have a number of
teachers.
Teach for America alums. Mm-hmm. There's more. All of them.
But in terms of teacher retention rates, they tend not to have the highest teacher retention rates. But we should explore the partnership more. And see how it's changed.
You wouldn't want the ones that are just getting trained for a couple of years. You want the ones that are kind of in the pipeline for maybe they're at a crossroads where they are given the option of going into management, and they're like, I don't know if I want management, so maybe this is an alternate job to continue teaching at a higher level.
I am a little concerned about, I think the information, the analysis, the data is really very, very positive. I'm wondering, and this is just a wondering, I don't need an answer to it, but with the development of changes in support through in-house subs, but I do understand the downside of having in-house subs, and loss of instructional coaches, but I might not understand the way they're called. So there's
the specialists.
There's instructional coaches.
You're right.
Okay. So there are two different.
The coaches went away, but we, except for one of them, and the specialists are all in place.
And the
specialists are the ones that coach the teachers.
Right. Okay. So they're no longer there. So I don't know if there's been an announcement. We don't need to go into it, but I'm curious, and maybe I can call you sometime. just because a lot of districts are going through that, a lot of schools are going through that because of the big fall off in funding, and those types of positions were very much supported during years where you have more funding. And that's why I've always advocated for building capacity, which I know this organization does. The one thing that I'm curious about, don't have to talk about it now, but maybe I can email you or call you, is just about English learners and how they're not, I mean, some are doing very well, some are not doing so well, and I just don't know about the programs, but I would like to find out more.
Wonderful. I think I'll just briefly, English learners are our student group that consistently, we struggle to serve across the board, across all sites. So, and this year we experienced some decline compared to last year. Mm-hmm. So what we thought was a promising turn has we haven't figured it out. So English learners are a concern of mine. And then in terms of capacity building, that's exactly where we're thinking this year. But it's with the loss of instructional coaches, there is a lot of nervousness by lots of different stakeholders because they felt dependent on their instructional coaches. What we've seen, and partly why we made that decision to cut those positions, is that their efficacy was really, really mixed. Just because we had instructional coaches did not actually mean there would be increases in student outcomes. Mm-hmm. There's much more likely to be increases in student outcomes if one's instructional coach was their AP of instruction. Mm-hmm. So the quality of the coach really matters. And so one of my goals for next year is
working with the principals on a weekly and biweekly basis to focus on instructional leadership and have the principals get really good at it and train someone on their staff to get really good at it and hold them accountable for it. So that capacity building that you're talking about is exactly where we are headed. Mm-hmm. And then, like Farnaz is saying, the longer we retain teachers, the more capacity we have in-house. So, yes, let's talk more. But, yes, that's where we're thinking.
So the absenteeism rate is the highest also among the English learners?
At ECMS Gardena, the chronic absenteeism rate was higher last year than it was the year before. So because
it's not specific to the English learners group.
Well, that was specific, solely at ECMS Gardena in that 1 year. What leads to you having a red on a dashboard is, say, your chronic absenteeism rate is 20% 1 year. If the next year it's 22% of your students were chronically absent, that's an increase in the chronically absent rate. And if it exceeds the state level, then you get a red. So that's what led to that. So this year we're doing better than the year before, so it won't be red again. Right. But that was the area that was of concern at that site.
I was just asking, because I thought if they have the highest rate of absenteeism, that seemed to coincide with those kids aren't in school.
Exactly. Yeah. Absolutely.
So whatever we're putting into place may not be really helping them if they're not there.
When I look at the data for English learners, they're a diverse group. They're not a monolith. But the group of students where we are struggling the most are duly designated students. So students who are English learners who also have IEPs or disabilities. Mm-hmm. That's the group of students that we need to figure out how to serve better. That's part of why Dave, Charity, Shalene, and I are engaging in this all means all training to support our approach to inclusive practices, because those students who have these intersectional identities are the ones who our program is least likely to be serving.
Okay.
So how do we change that and change their experience so that they feel more connected, safer, successful at school?
So that kind of brings me to my point about what Denise said earlier. Is like you mentioned in the past, the idea of like we just need to do better, and like that's the outcome outweighs the actual full situation that goes into all the factors that go into it. So I agree with that sentiment, and we got to do better. But I also really respect the fact that we're seeing it from a full view. Mm-hmm. It's easy to say you got to do better when I don't know the 18 different things, if the factors that you're factoring into what means success year over year. Mm-hmm. So while I think that that's a good term to think of internally, I think what the way that you presented the updates and the progress should be thought of as positive as well, because the journey is going in the right direction.
Yeah.
And nonetheless, the societal factors, the retention of folks, the rigorousness of the amount of absenteeism, these factors are things that you don't quite have all the control of over those levers. So I think it's just worth
I appreciate the level of love and empathy around this table. One last thing I'll share is that, so Jen sits on the board she's an elected official who sits on the board of the Manhattan Beach Unified School District, and Madhu is familiar, as is Zena, with that board. I used to work alongside them and so went to a lot of those meetings. But they would hit 89% proficiency sometimes, and the parents would come into those board meetings and be like, why is it not 95%?
Yeah.
This is, our students should be 95%. This is really just not acceptable. And while I truly appreciate your empathy and your love for us, and I'm grateful for our growth, and I really appreciate what's happening in our schools, I want us to approach their outcomes with the same level of urgency as Manhattan Beach moms on the school board did. Because really, like, if 92% of our students are going to college and only 25% of them are proficient in math,
yeah,
then we're not setting them up to be successful at college. And so, so grateful for, and I'm empathetic, Seth, as well, and I love my team, and I couldn't be more proud of, like, the growth that we're showing, but I want us to also, like, live with it's not good enough.
Yeah, that's a good life model. Like, improve,
yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
If but I remember, may. you're not dealing with a Manhattan Beach mom population.
Yeah. No, but can I give you a statistic?
And by the way, that's not
I know.
The Manhattan Beach mom population has its own baggage and everything. So
yes, no, I know. I appreciate. I just
one more comment, and then we'll do a time check.
ECS's A through G completion rate is actually higher than MUSD's.
Yep,
just gonna let you know.
100%.
So,
let's drop.
Go with the stats. Thank you.
Go with the data, because I can get on that sometimes. Thank you to Robert and Valeria, who helped.
I think it's a holistic process.
Yeah.
It's like corporate social responsibility. You look at the people, the planet, and the profits. And you're looking at the people, the environment, and achievement.
Yep.
Right? And you have to look at all three together. They all are symbiotic.
Thank you.
Okay. Do we need to close this public hearing officially, or where are we on to the next thing? Can we just move on?
Yes, Cynthia.
Thank you.
It is. We want to ensure there's an opportunity for the public to come in and provide comment, but in place of that,
hear ye, all public members. Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry. Thank you.
No, you should.
All right. Okay. There are no members of the public present, so therefore a public hearing would be. Moving on, consent items A through M. If I'm not mistaken, we asked if there are any questions about any of the items, and then
we have a motion to approve and a second question. Discussion.
Okay. Say that again.
May I have a motion to approve the consent item?
Okay, so just without even
start with that, and then you
different than what I'm used
to.
Okay, yeah. No. Motion to, may I have a motion to approve consent items?
A through M.
A through M.
I motion.
Okay, Denise.
I can't.
Okay.
I do.
Now,
now,
are there any questions, or we're going
to
just go ahead and vote? Are there any questions?
Yeah.
Are there any questions about any of the consent items or comments? Hearing none, let's go around the table. And please say your name and say, I approve name and I approve consent items A through M. Shall we start?
I could do roll call. Howard?
Okay.
Howard, I approve consent items A through M.
You can just say I if you want.
Okay.
Mason?
Aye.
Zena?
Aye.
Madhu?
Aye.
Denise?
Aye.
Betsy?
Aye.
Anthony?
Aye.
Thank you.
Okay, next time I will do that. It's better for me to say it and move a lot faster. Thank you so much. All right, moving on. Thank you for bearing with me.
No, you're doing amazing. You're doing great.
Item C, approve private donations. This is all part of this.
That's part of it. So then you go the next. Next one is action items.
Thank you.
Right here. And so these you have to go one by one. So action item A, approve local control accountability plans.
Local control plans for ECHS, ECMS, G, ECMS, I, ECHS, G.
May I have a motion?
May I have a motion to approve?
Action item A.
Action item A.
I'll second it. Yeah, okay. Mason motion to approve action item A.
Second it.
All those in favor? Do we need to discuss?
You just have
discussion.
To.
Okay. Any discussion? Hearing none.
That's right.
We'll start.
Aye.
Please. Oh, no, I'm sorry, Howard.
Howard, aye.
Mason,
aye.
Zena, aye.
Madhu,
aye.
Sidney,
aye.
Betsy, aye.
Anthony.
Anthony, aye.
Thank you.
All right.
This is really a learning on the job experience. Okay.
You're doing a good job.
I feel you're doing getting better.
You're doing amazing.
No, I am not.
There's a lot of nuance to when you do the approvals.
For an understanding, though, we could do better.
We're all like, you're great. We're all done. We're all going to make it out.
I'm gonna rephrase and say you are amazing.
Thank you. B, approve 2024-25 budgets for ECHSL, ECMSG, ECMSI, ECHSG as recommended by Finance Committee. Are there any questions or comments about
motion
to approve?
Gina, motion to approve action item B.
Madhu, second. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Howard,
aye. Mason, aye.
Zine, aye.
Madhu, aye.
Denise, aye.
Betsy, aye. Okay.
Anthony, aye.
Go after Betsy.
Okay. Item C, approve 2024 California School Dashboard Local Indicators for all of the schools. Motion to approve.
I move to approve action item C. Mason.
I second. Denise.
Thank you. Moved and seconded.
Howard.
Discussion.
Any discussion items?
Yeah.
Questions? Discussion?
All right.
A little jumpy.
Howard, aye.
Mason, aye.
Zena, aye.
Madhu, aye.
Denise, aye.
Betsy, aye. Okay.
Anthony.
Anthony, aye.
Thank you. All right. I need a little cheat sheet that says the exact order. Anyway. Item D, approve 2024-25 academic calendars for all schools. Motion to approve.
I move to approve action item D.
There is second. Denise, second. Are there any questions? No? No comments? Don't do that.
That's perfect. Okay.
Howard, aye.
Mason, aye.
Gina, aye.
Madhu, aye.
Denise, aye.
Betsy, aye.
Anthony.
Anthony, aye.
Yay.
Ooh,
okay. All right.
Yay, Betsy.
Like training a seal. It's not brain science.
It's hard.
It's just knowing the order and what words to come out of my mouth.
It's trippy.
It is. It's not in the order.
You're all so kind, really. It's nice. Okay. Item 7, upcoming dates and announcements.
So this is the moment where I'm going to ask you guys to make sure you put these on your calendars. These are all the dates for the coming year. If you go to do this right now or tomorrow and you say, you know what, I really can't make it, if you could let us know sooner rather than later, because then if we know a number of people can't make it, then we'll need to go back to the drawing board. But it's similar dates.
These are just for the remainder of this.
It's just August, right?
Did you
send the consent agenda?
Sorry, yes. The dates are in the consent agenda.
Okay.
The dates are linked there, and you can update your calendars if possible.
And the invites will go out next week.
Yeah, so you'll get them.
All right, perfect.
And with that, appreciation. I want to sincerely.
If I may.
Oh.
Go ahead.
Betsy,
I just.
You're an incredible thought partner. We're so super lucky to have you on our board. We're so lucky to have you as our board president. Thank you for stepping into this role. We're incredibly fortunate. So grateful for you.
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Zena, aye.
So you're training me.
I also want to appreciate Jen Fenton, because she wears so many hats in this organization. Her willingness to step from being director of health and safety to now really leading our development efforts and writing our LCAPs and doing whatever the organization needs, helping with communications, doing social media, like just jack of all trades, Jane of all trades, and awesome on all fronts. So grateful for how hard you're working.
And being able to articulate it to all of us.
Yeah.
That's a huge accomplishment.
Really good. Get it.
And you made it fun.
Yeah.
Numbers can be fun. Data can be fun.
It is.
If I may say, I just want to say that, appreciate Farnaz, your intellect, your commitment, your passion. I stated earlier about you and the board and the staff, but I wanted to thank you for the last several years of our partnership. You have done an incredible job as your evaluation continues to reflect. And so I just really want to appreciate the fact that you have been a phenomenal partner, and also appreciate Jeremiah as board president, the amount of work he does to make life easier for us and for me has been great. So I just want to thank Farnaz and Jeremiah for making my presidency much easier. So thank you.
Thank you, Anthony.
Thank you, Jeremiah. I would like to echo that because I think that, this organization, in my experience, is unique because I have not worked with a charter school, and I have not worked with an organization that is so clear and specific about its mission, and one that I hold close to my heart and is very meaningful to me. The LCAP in and of itself is not meaningful, these types of things that we need to go through in public education, but the commitments that everyone has made and the sentiment and the ideas and I don't want to get political. Well, I do, but I'm not going to. It's a very, very important organization to hold up as a beacon of hope in these times that we're in right now. So very, very proud of everyone's work and proud to be part of this. As shaky as I am on my on my debut here. Any other appreciation?
I appreciate that you made this meeting fun.
Oh, Well, I don't take myself seriously, so that's, I sleep better at night as a result. So transition to number 8, transition to closed session.
No closed session.
Okay, fantastic. There's these items, they don't need to be.
Yeah,
okay.
So they need to jump to motion to adjourn.
Jumping to a motion to adjourn meeting, may I entertain a motion to adjourn the meeting?
I move to adjourn the meeting.
I do.
I second.
Denise second. Any discussion? All right.
Talk about
a motion to adjourn. Maybe second. All those.
Howard, I.
Hold on, let's go back to the discussion part. Mason, I.
Dina, I. Padu, I.
Denise, I.
Anthony.
Anthony, I. Thank you, Bessie, for being the new president.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.